Once a month, we hear what it is like to live with mental illness. Our guides are the people of Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford. It's built on the clubhouse model of community mental health care. It is a place where people with persistent mental illness come together to support each other and their shared place. This month, the story of Mike. And before we get to that story, Elizabeth Hazelwood is the executive director of Southern Oregon Compass House and back in the studio with me again. Good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about what we're going to hear here from Mike.
A day in the life, what it's like. A lot of times people think about mental illness and they don't really understand that it happens to everybody. One in four adults is going to be diagnosed with it. It does not discriminate. It hits everyone from every walk of life and affects people around the world.
One in four, okay. And then that's of any particular level of severity?
No, that's in total. But that's the ones that are that have received diagnoses. There's estimates of almost twice that living and never getting diagnoses, but living with symptoms.
All right. So here is Mike's story as told to Bryce Harding at Compass House.
I'm bipolar too, and it's not that bad if you control it. I realize that I have probably been bipolar too most of my life because I look back at it and I find that I lost jobs because I was bipolar too and I had never gotten any help. I had a quick temper. It was hard for me to finish things up. And just the way I dealt with people pretty much all my life, going back to grade school, my wife found some report cards of mine, and she read them. She goes, "Yeah, you've had it since then." So it was, it gave me a way to look back. My interest in doing this interview is to let other people know that if they're not feeling right or they're depressed, and depression is a slippery slope because some people don't even realize they are depressed. And I guess I would just really emphasize, if you're not really comfortable with the way you handle things, if you look back on your life and go, "Yeah, I've had 13 jobs," there's probably something that you need to deal with. I know I did. There's no embarrassment to say that you have a mental health issue. Because statistically, one in four people have some sort of mental health. It could be depression. It could be a lot of things. But that is statistically backed up, has sources, that one in four people have mental health issues. And that doesn't mean you're crazy. That doesn't mean that, you can't live life. That just means you maybe need to get a counselor or something like that and be proud of it because you're trying to help yourself.
Could you kind of describe what living with bipolar 2 can be like?
Well, I found that my bipolar 2 came up really hard a little later in life. I'm 57 years old, and it's really affected my life in a really important way. For the last couple of years, it was hard to get out of the house. It was hard to finish things because you knew you needed to do them. You just couldn't get off the couch to go do them. And that was one of my major things, was depression. But as I said, it affects your wife, your children, and such. And as I mentioned earlier, it does affect your work life. It affects every aspect of your life. I look back on my life and I see that my father had it and it was never diagnosed. My sisters have it and it was never diagnosed. And it has affected their life and how they have operated in their life. Not to say they're not good people. It's just, it's held them back in life.
You've talked a few times about mental illness affecting work. Would you mind talking a little bit more about that?
Well, yeah. I've got all kinds of experience about how it affected me at work. I was a city manager at one time and basically got fired because I had to be right all the time. And I was depressed. And when you're depressed, you tend to get snappy and short with people. And it affects, as I said earlier, it affects the way you look at life. You know, that was 20 years ago. I can look back on that now with the mental health that I have received and go, that's why I acted like that. I acted like that because I was bipolar too, never knew it. There's all kinds of things like that. I lost one job because, you know, the boss said something to me that I didn't like, and I said something to him that wasn't appropriate back, got fired immediately. Those are the kind of things that if you're experiencing those, you really need to look and see if you can handle those things. And getting help and working on your own mental health from experience, yes, you can overcome those. Yes, you can become a better person. All I have to say is don't wait until you're 57 to figure it out.
One thing I think may be difficult for folks maybe not living with a mental illness to understand is you've talked quite a bit about being stuck in the house. Like, what was it like? Can you speak to why it was so difficult to leave?
Everything. And it basically gets to that. Everything. You know, you don't even like the TV channels. You don't even really care what you eat. Now, that's at a very extreme end of bipolar too. You may never even get to that point. But I finally did get to that point at 57, and to be perfectly honest, it scared me to death. I'd never been depressed like that. All I wanted to do is pack all my stuff up in a backpack and just take off because I didn't want to deal with anything. And I realize that's not the thing to do. That's not the thing to do to deal with your problems and your, you know, just your general health altogether. You can't run from things. You got to go straight in on it and try to do the best you can. But the thing that really scared me on this last bout is that it never went away. It got worse and worse every day. I mean, if I could do the dishes so my wife wouldn't get after me, was a good day for me, which is kind of sad that, you know, the only thing you can make yourself do is put the dishes in the dishwasher. And now I have a lot more concern about other people. I have an ability to say, I'm just going to do this one thing today. I'm going to cut the grass today. No matter how I feel, I'm going to cut the grass. To be honest, I don't care if I do anything else the rest of the day because I'm had enough motivation because of getting better and having counseling that I realized that you just don't change overnight.
Was there any point in all that time where you thought maybe something was going on and you didn't feel like you could get help?
To be honest, and this is part of the depression part, I actually had quite a bit of backing on getting some help. And I fought it, and I fought it, because I thought there was something wrong with me. So I didn't listen to any of it. It was just, didn't want to hear it. That's, you know, it's not correct. And I found out that I had to almost hit rock bottom before I decided to get any help. If you don't address it, there's going to come a time in your life where you're going to get depressed or something's going to happen and you're never going to come out of it unless you do try to get some help. And that's speaking from experience. Like I said, the last 8 months of my life have been pretty tough. I do have help that I talk to people at least a couple times a month, and it's helped me tremendously. And if you do need some medicine to help you better for your depression, that counselor can refer you to somebody that can help you with that. And once again, don't think there's anything wrong with having to take an antidepressant. There's different kinds. If you've ever tried it before, you may have been on the wrong one. And you can find out what it is over a period of time. I know that is what my experience is. So that's pretty much my story about it. I wouldn't have done this interview 2 years ago because I would have been ashamed. But I basically tell everybody I meet anymore that I'm bipolar too. And actually, I'm proud of it because I'm happy. I have nothing to be ashamed of. And anybody else that has bipolar 2, bipolar 1, you know, whatever the issue may be, you can get help and you can be happy again.
There's an optimistic final note from Mike talking to Bryce Harding at Compass House in this month's edition of Compass Radio. Elizabeth Hazelwood in the studio with me now, the executive director at Compass House. Bipolar 2, how does that differ from bipolar 1?
It's just a separation. It's the same illness, but with slightly different symptoms. But even people that live with bipolar 2, the same diagnosis affects two people very, very differently. You know, Mike talks a lot and shares a lot about how he battled depression a lot with that particular diagnosis. Other people are on the other end of the spectrum and have the more of the ideas that go along with mania and things along those lines.
We seem to be hesitant to say manic, I noticed lately.
Yes, absolutely. And it's one of those words that managed to get stigma around it. And really people get a wrong idea, which is why Mike is a phenomenal person to share his story. He's educated. He's successful. He's articulate. And people don't tend to think that mental illness affects people that with that background. But it does. It affects everybody.
Does bipolar present more challenges in diagnosis than other mental illnesses?
Every diagnosis has different challenges, and it is one of the ones that has more symptoms and things like living with it and making sure that you can find yourself on either end of the spectrum and knowing how to deal with that. You know, some days you may not want to get out of bed. Other days you may be overrun with energy, and those are two very different ends that one person has to deal with.
We have talked a fair amount on Compass Radio about suicide. Spent a couple of sessions earlier this year talking about suicide, and of course, very much in the news at the moment because there was the Kate Spade suicide earlier this week. Yesterday, the news that in about half of the states, suicide is up 30% since 1999, including in Oregon. It looks like it's between 12 and 24%. Anthony Bourdain's suicide announced just this morning. So this must be, you know, I don't want to say it's good, but does it help that at least we're talking about this?
Talking about it is so important because right now there are thousands of people that are contemplating suicide that aren't getting the help that they need. And making it something that people aren't ashamed of. It's any other illness and it's seeking the help when you need it and not being like, oh, I don't want people to think badly about me. It's not a failure. It's just getting the help that you need.
It seems like the greater awareness of mental illness and the less stigmatization of mental illness coincides, and I don't know if there's necessarily an overlap or interconnection, with the discussion of adverse childhood experiences and trauma-informed care. And I wonder, is it easy or is it even necessary to differentiate mental illness from problems that come just from having a lousy childhood?
I think that they go together. A lot of people that live with mental illness have had a huge amount of trauma in their lives. And there's all sorts of studies that that show that they go together. They're hand in hand, that they correlate. Because a lot of times people can carry the gene for mental illness, but it needs an actual trigger. And that's where trauma comes in. And that's why being aware of the ACEs study and trauma-informed care is incredibly important. And how we deal with those, especially as this new generation of children grow up. Maybe we can find a way to reduce the trauma, or at least the lifelong effects of it.
With the bipolar disorder that Mike was talking about, and again, he mentioned bipolar 2 versus bipolar 1, is it likely, or how likely is it that bipolar people will go off their medication if they are taking any, because they think, hey, things are fine now, I've stabilized?
Absolutely. That is one of the biggest challenges with that particular diagnosis, is you start feeling good. You start feeling confident in yourself again, and then you feel that you don't need to take the medication. And, you know, sometimes going off medications is a choice that people make, and it can have terrible effects.
So I have to wonder, when you get situations like what we got going on lately, where there's a notable celebrity suicide, and two now actually, and then the statistics all coming out yesterday about, again, the incidence of suicide up in almost all uniformly across the country, but in half of the states up by 30%, which is a shockingly high figure. Is this something that engenders conversation among the clubhouse members? Do you guys talk about these things?
Absolutely. And that's one of the beautiful things, is that we have open dialogue about whatever is happening. We talk about these things, and we reinforce the need. If you're feeling this way, let somebody know, and we will make sure that you get the clinical help you need. But then also, too, ways to discuss it with other people that you care about, because a lot of times people don't know how to have those conversations with the people that are closest to them. So talking it through in a safe place.
There are places for people to turn if they're feeling really down at any time. I mean, there's a national hotline, mm-hmm. and I don't know if you remember the number off the top of your head. I know I don't. I better see if I can look it up here. But the fact is that if somebody feels like they're having suicidal ideation, or they think somebody around them is, for one thing, we've established, don't be afraid to talk about it. You're not going to cause it.
Absolutely. If you are contemplating suicide, call the crisis line. There's a special, if you hit option 1 for veterans, you can also get veteran services too.
All right. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-8255. Notice the 8255 is talk. 800-273-8255, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. Many thanks to Mike for sharing his story of living with bipolar disorder. And thanks, as always, to Bryce Harding at Compass House for doing the interviews for us. Elizabeth Hazelwood, the Executive Director, thank you again for joining us in studio.
Thank you.